It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host, bringing you the best of golf and golf lifestyle week after week after week, moment to moment, and other divisions of time. I haven't been in for a while. I'll tell you why in a minute. But before we get to that goo, let me tell you who we have on this week because I'm super excited. As you know, this is a Masters post-game episode, and Hideki Matsuyama won in historic fashion at 10 under, becoming the first Japanese player to win a major. It's a big deal. I lived in Asia for 5 years. I know firsthand how nuts the game, people take the game there. They are absolutely fanatics for golf. The number of golf courses per capita is insane in Japan. And the weight that has been on this kid's shoulders was lifted. As a matter of fact, he lifted that weight off and put a green jacket on. It was a spectacular performance by him, and give him all the credit in the world. It was great to watch a lot of players distinguish themselves that this week. We're going to talk to someone who is as well qualified to talk about the Masters as anyone living. He is a three-time Masters winner. He is a Hall of Fame golfer. He is a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and just kind of a cool dude. We got Sir Nick Faldo in this week to talk about the Masters, and not only about the Masters and Augusta National. We're going to talk about the game of golf, how it's progressing. We're going to talk about his contributions to the future of the game through the Faldo series that he sponsors and operates, that's bringing young players, young men and women, young boys and girls from all over the globe into the game of golf. We'll talk about the distance debate. We'll talk about the winners and losers from the Masters. We're going to talk about a lot of things, and I'm just over the moon to have this guy on again, second time into the 19th hole, but this one you don't want to miss. It's a long interview, so I want you to sit back. I was going to break it up with some sort of commercial break or something like that, but you know what? I just wanted to let him flow, okay? Just sit back and just chill. You can stop it. It's appointment listening anyway, so if you want to stop halfway, you know, take a break, go get a crunchy snack or beverage, you can go do that. So a big block, a superset of Nick Faldo coming up. For those of you who have been asking and worried, yes, I've been off the air for a couple of weeks, and it wasn't exactly the way I would want to be off the air. I did, in fact, have a little health scare. Wasn't COVID-related. I had to go into the hospital because somehow, some way, go figure, I developed some sort of massive, crazy bleeding stomach ulcer, and it knocked me for a loop. I will spare you the gory details, but I will tell you that I did lose about half my blood supply, and it was nuts. And I just am grateful to the ER doctor who put me directly in ICU, saying, look, I have seen two other patients like you in my life, and I didn't do enough soon enough, and I'm not going to have a third. And that guy probably saved my bacon. Very grateful for all the doctors who took care of me in the ICU, all the nurses at Holy Cross Hospital, doctors and nurses and attendants and everybody at Holy Cross Hospital here in Silver Spring. They took such good care of me. And when you're laying there and you have you're incapacitated. I mean, the doctors didn't want me to roll over in bed because they were worried that my heart rate would go too high. They said, don't move. They were going to strap me down. That's how sort of dicey it was, you know, for a while there. And you're sitting there like that and you're incapacitated and you're thinking about things and thinking, well, is this the last thing I'm going to see and that sort of thing? I mean, you get real contemplative, believe me. And I remembered a lot about my faith in those moments, and I got a lot of appreciation for the people who help people out. I got a chance to talk to some of the doctors and nurses, especially the nurses who were in ICU and have been doing this work over the course of over a year and dealing with COVID. A lot of them came through and talked to me because as bad as I was I was conscious, and so that they could talk to me, and they, on every shift, there were nurses who weren't, I wasn't their responsibility. They would come in. They would come in and talk, and I asked somebody, you know, what's the deal? Why am I getting so much attention? And they said, well, in ICU, normally we don't get to talk to our patients. Either they're conscious, semi-conscious, or they're intubated. So it's just kind of nice to be able to talk to a patient, which kind of got me choked up. And that there was one point along the way, and they were so helpful. I mean, just with everything, anything that you needed, they were anticipating those needs. Many times you didn't even have to ask for it, and they were all over it. There was one point where I was completely incapacitated, and you know, I couldn't do anything myself. I couldn't lift my arms. I couldn't do anything. They had to like dress me in the whole thing, and I felt embarrassed, quite frankly. You know, my pride was kicking in because I was like, you know, I want to be able to do things for myself, and I was really sort of feeling ashamed. And one of the nurses could tell how I was feeling. And she looks at me and she puts her hand on my shoulder and she says, look, you know, you seem like a guy who maybe you helped out some people before in your life. Maybe you've done some things for some people when they weren't able to do it for themselves. Okay. And I, you know, had strength to nod. And she says, I hope so. I said, I hope so. And she says, well, look, good. Because you were banking it for this time, okay? This is your time to let someone do for you, okay? You need to let someone help you. And of course, now there's tears in my eyes, there's tears in her eyes, and they're helping me and they're doing the thing. And I'm just overwhelmed by the caring, by the skill, by the tenacious nature of these people. By the way they protect in your most vulnerable moments, they protect not only your life, they protect your dignity. And I couldn't have been more moved or more impressed. My mom was a nurse. My late mom, she was a nurse for 45 years. And I know that I had some appreciation for her nursing skills, both, you know, as a kid, you know, we were her patients as kids, but I know that people would ask for her, you know, famous people would come into town, and she was a private duty nurse, and people would ask for her by name. We want Virginia Williams. And I got a chance to see why there, because it matters who's taking care of you. It matters that that somebody's there when you absolutely, positively need them. So a big shout out to those guys. I'm on the road to recovery, and I'm sort of taking it easy and, you know, trying to build up my stamina, aka my blood supply. I'm modifying my diet and, you know, all sorts of things, all sorts of changes. So God willing and the crick don't wise, surprise, I don't have to take a break like that anymore because of some health reasons. But I want to thank everyone who reached out and asked about me, all the well wishes on the thoughts, prayers, cards, and gestures that you made. Every single one of them was heard, felt, and appreciated. And again, I just hope to be able to start to keep banking, you know, my account of goodwill, you know, with all of you. Hopefully this show does something to affect your mood and does your body and soul a little bit of good from week to week. But help somebody is what I want to say. When you feel like somebody needs some help, reach out and help them, because it won't be forgotten and it will be appreciated and you'll get it back, because what goes around certainly does come around. So again, thank you all for what you did for me. And I certainly appreciate it. And boy, it's feels good to be back. Feels really good to be back. And what a way to come back with the great golfer, great player, great ambassador for the game, great golf course designer, great announcer, just a great guy, Sir Nick Faldo. So less of me, more of him. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with Sir Nick. So get ready, get set, go. Michael Williams, 19th hole, golf, WRX. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, and I am still glowing from the Masters this past week. Hideki Matsuyama with his historic win. But it was just good to see Augusta National in the spring, as it's supposed to be, with drama, as it's supposed to have, with fans, a little, who are supposed to attend. It's all the rituals and the rites of spring in that place that make it so special for all of us. It's that year after year, that thing that's so familiar during times where we have so many unfamiliar things happening. One of those familiar things is actually my next guest. He is as a part of Augusta National and the Masters as anyone or anything can be at this point, a three-time winner of that event. He is a Hall of Fame golfer. I believe he is a Hall of Fame broadcaster at this point. He is a golf course architect. The only thing he hasn't done that I know of in golf is get on a mower and take care of a green, but he's probably done that too. But it's really an honor to spend some time with him here on the 19th hole. Please welcome our guest, again, Hall of Famer, Sir Nick Faldo. Sir Nick, welcome to the 19th hole. Welcome back, I should say.
Yeah, thanks very much. That's good. Like, I haven't mowed a lawn for
these
years, as we would say. Yeah.
Hey, we got to get you on a mower, man. Get you edging and, maybe get on a roller.
I will. I've got a plan. We've just got some property up in Bozeman, Montana, so I've got a field to cut, so I'm going to have to learn how to mow a lawn, yes.
Okay, I'm an expert in that, so if you need some instruction, you can call on me. I guess the best place to start would be in the Masters. Let's do a quick recap. Hideki Matsuyama, again, winning at 10-under. Nothing like the score that Dustin Johnson put up last fall, but still a dramatic win, a historic win. You had the best seat in the house, literally. Tell me about your thoughts on the week, about the conditions that were out there, the score, and the winner. Were you surprised by Matsuyama breaking through this year?
No, it's funny. I have a tradition. I was out walking last year in November. I was walking with Trevor Immelman, who obviously does commentary as well. And I said, it's funny. Sometimes the first golfer I bump into wins. And so we arrived at the first green, and there was Hideki putting. So I thought, last year. So I put a pound on him last year to win. I said, why not? I just be silly, right on the nose. And of course, I'm a year out. Classic. Yeah. So, we had a great time. Obviously, spring, they really did manage to get it close to, old days in the spring when it gets nice and hard, and everybody was talking about that. Many come in early, Friday, Saturday, Sunday before, and they're all talking about the firmness and speed of the greens. And we got it for day one when, I said 69 will be as good as it gets. Well, there was two of them. And of course, Justin Rose had a completely off the charts day.
Right.
When you make, shooting 9-under for 10 holes, you don't do on rock hard greens and all that sort of thing. So that was just a freaky, fantastic day. And then it settled down, then the humidity came back, and they made some score the next day, and then day three, they always tried to set it up a little bit tougher, so that was, again, a difficult day. And Sunday, they gave them a few more of the traditional hole locations, gave them a little bit more of a chance, and so we had a bit of excitement, but, Hideki kind of, for a while, outplayed everybody to get the lead, and... But as we know, no lead is really safe there. Anything can happen. You can get a quick two-shot swing here and there. And, it could have been really dramatic if Xander, he teed off first on 16, if he'd hit it in super close and, there could have been another two-shot swing there. It could have been a 2-4, just saying. And then that would have been a real drama. But unfortunately, he went the other way. And Hideki was able to kind of, not quite cruise, you still got to hit the right shots. But, good luck to him. It's fantastic for him, fantastic for Japanese golf, for Asian golf. And hopefully he will really inspire some youngsters. And, it's going to, it'll take him a while to come down from that, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So I assume he's already back in Japan. He headed back, and and they'll be celebrating for, well, forever on that one.
Indeed. Do you see Matsuyama as a multiple Masters winner, a multiple major championship winner, or do you think this might be a one?
You know, this was the biggest, you know, pressure to get off any Japanese golfer. You know, obviously, a few have tried from the names we've known, Aoki and Tommy Nakajima and other players like that. And then Ryo Ishikawa came over, you know, and couldn't handle it. So Hideki is the very, you know, they carry so much media attention. And so he, obviously, tournament winner, he's won five times on tour. And then to have a major breakthrough. So if he can handle that and then settle down, you really don't know, but you maybe got a feeling that he would like to for that not to be his only major. You know, he stands a good chance of, you know, to compete on other major setups.
One player reintroduced himself this week, and one introduced himself to the world. Reintroduction, Jordan Spieth. Introduction, Will Zalatoris. Talk a little bit about what you saw there with Jordan Spieth and sort of his renaissance, if you will. And then this kid who's about 115 pounds soaking wet, you know, almost taking the green jacket, which would have to be tailored especially for him, you know.
Yeah, he could probably get in one sleep.
Right.
So, Jordan's obviously battling and had to deal with all of that negativity for a couple of years now. Like, when are you going to come back? What's this? And, you know, he was sliding, going the wrong way for a while. And then, obviously, he's got things working. You know, his balance is better than his swing. I spoke to him at Champions Dinner. You know, as we go for say, you know, get the club down in front of you rather than stuck behind. It had a lot to do with his posture and his weight transference. But his scrambling is amazing. You know, how good his wedge play is. So I did blurt out on television the weekend. I mean, early call might be Jordan at Key Ryland, because if it's windy, that golf course, you really need to be able to scramble, because you will, you know, good shots will miss those greens, will run off into some rough places, you know, some rough lies. So, hey, on paper, his scrambling is, you know, probably better than anybody. And what a motivation. If he wins that, he wins the Grand Slam. So, you know, if it was me, I'd be down there and go and really check that course out and do all my homework and know where the safe place to look. He's going to get a lot of sea breeze, and some shots got elevated greens, so you can get pretty windswept there in places. So it'd be worth knowing where the ball's likely to finish and you know what's the easiest side of the green to miss it. So he definitely's got a chance. And you know, I've only known Will, obviously, this season, and we were already, guys have watched him and already were touting him. And, you know, he has a unique kind of approach to the game right now. I mean, he talk about just assess it, take one look and hit it. It goes there. It's almost like a dart's bar. Look there, throw it, land, boom. And he was very impressive, very impressive. So he's obviously got a good, great attitude. And, I mean, you know, you haven't seen no scar damage or memories when you're that young. You just want to go and play. You just want to go and compete. So he could be a danger man. He could keep playing like that through the summer. He's been playing just about well every week. So they'll have to work on getting him some status, because they might want him for the Ryder Cup team by September.
Yeah, you got to love the kid's attitude. He stands up, take a look, and you say, take a look, hit it. And when he had his post-tournament interview, he talks about how, hey, I've been thinking about this for all my life, so why should I be nervous? This is what I've been asking for. I want to take my shot and see if I can get it. So I love about him.
You won't be nervous, but you still will fear it. You know, I want to put myself in this situation, and I'll go and play and find out what it's all about. That's what you should be doing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's appealing to me. And going back to Matsuyama, and sort of transferring to a conversation about your Faldo series for junior players, Hideki is a player who benefited greatly from advanced junior competition. And in fact, the first time you and I met was at the Greenbrier during one of your Faldo series, the youth tournaments there.
And
we were doing a thing for St. Jude at the same time, which you attended. And also Ian Poulter was tweeting, and it was a big night in a lot of ways that night. But the Faldo series is entering its 25th year, and you have a global schedule now. This has become a serious thing. This is a big thing. Talk a little bit about the Faldo series for those who don't know anything about it, where it is, what you do, what the mission of the series is, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, my quick elevator pitch is, you know, it's, as you said, 25 seasons on now. You know, it started in Great Britain, and we very quickly expanded across Europe, and then we took that model to Asia. So we have, between Europe and Asia, we have about 40 events, and then we have two grand finals. So one grand final will be in the Middle East, will be in Al Ain, which is just outside of Dubai. It should be in around November-ish. And then we generally have a Asia Grand Final in Vietnam, at just north of Da Nang, a course I designed. And Banyan Tree Resort, and they look after it's fantastic. And, you know, we bring all the winners across the region. So we usually end up with about 80 kids, something like that, boys and girls, who come and play, and they love it. And they compete, and because they want to win. And if you win my grand finals, then you'll go to the next grand final. So if you win the age groups, so that's a real treat for some players who could literally be, you know, later in the year, be on a plane to the other side of, you know, the planet, and can play in a completely different environment. And now we've joined forces with the Hurricane Tour to create the Faldo Hurricane Series. So it's new events, more events. We've got 24 events in America, 6 finals, 1 grand final. And so all of that will be kind of put together. We're working on South America as well with Latin America, you know, to create a series down there with the RNA. The RNA have been on board with me for 25 years, so we run a push now to create, again, a little series down in the South America, maybe 8 to 12 events that haven't. They'll have a grand final. I'm not too sure whether South America will be really ready for it by spring of whatever, summer of next year, after what they're going through with COVID and new variants right now. So got a lot going on. And then we're even talking to some countries. My son Matthew is my series director, and he's been talking to Kenya. They're interested in trying to get to start a golfing program with a goal to get to the Olympics in 2028. So we're trying to help as many different areas as we can to introduce golf to youngsters. I also have a joint forces with a company called Golfway, and it's created Faldo Golfway, which is it's called them junior club. You remember the old days when your plastic clubs had a plastic shaft in them full of, you know, and it sounded awful, and the ball went off in corkscrews. They've now got a real golf shaft in this with a lovely big plastic head with, you know, Velcro ball that you fire to targets. And you get points. So it's fun. You can, and I want to prove it's not a toy. It's actually instructional. I played actually with Dustin Johnson, a couple of youngsters about 6 weeks ago. I just to kind of do a little showcase for it. I think that'll be on one of my shows soon, on my Faldo Formula show. So, yeah, we're trying to do everything we can to really introduce people for the first time, then give them some grassroots coaching, and then they will move on and, you know, have instructional programs, and who knows, hopefully some of them will end up coming and playing Faldo Series events. And we've got more plans after that, but there's been a lot of good talking going on. Obviously, through COVID times, we've all been trying to plan and plot to see what we can do between me and the PGA Tour and the European Tour. So, we got to capitalize on golf being so popular right now. because, you know, it's outdoor sport. We deem that we're safe out there.
Yeah.
It's good for us mentally, physically, to get out and play golf. So we got to, as I said, we got to capitalize on that and really expand things the best we can.
We are talking global golf domination with Sir Nick Faldo here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. You mentioned that boys and girls are competing in the event.
Yeah.
And you have done a lot for women in golf, for young girls in golf, advancing into women in golf. That's a particular passion of yours, to make sure that you have those opportunities there for both the boys and the girls, is it not?
Well, yeah, the early days, the numbers were very poor. You know, I'm trying to think what the real, you know, we might get 60 boys in an event and only 8 girls. When this first started with the Faraday Series, you know, it was 25 plus years ago. And now we would be, well, we'll be at capacity on both sides. We've got events now where we've got 260 entries.
Wow!
So we have to put another golf course on. So, and the girls are like a huge percentage of that now. So they're and of course, you know, I employed the great Fanny Sunnison on my bag, the only obviously only major winning lady professional caddy. So that's always been the part of the series, to give opportunity to the boys and girls equally. And, you know, our tournament, our grand finals, if the girls shoot the lowest score, they win. And we've had 5 winners. We've had 5 girls have actually won my series grand final. So both in Europe and Asia. So yeah, we have a unique sport where boys and girls can compete together. So I'm just doing the best I can to make them feel comfortable and enjoy. Well, they love being competitive, especially if they're being competitive against.
Indeed, and my research,
a couple of lads, yeah.
My research tells me that you, the Faldo Series, I should say, is a signatory of the RNA's Women in Golf Charter to advance the game for women, and you even had, I believe it's 8 Faldo Series players in the recent Augusta National Women's Amateur Field. 8 players in the field is huge.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. So they're getting more opportunities, more experience everywhere, and you know, I hope some of them make the tour and become famous and can fly the Faldo Series banner for us.
Do you get a percentage of any of their winnings for the rest of their career?
What's that? No.
Are you locked in?
No, we just pass them on, yeah. So it's just give them all this lovely experience, and that's my way of, you know, paying back or pay forward, whatever you like to call it, to choose in this great sport. So, yeah, if I can give kids better opportunities, that's my mission.
And that's a worthy and noble mission indeed. I want to talk a little bit about the present and future of the game before we let you go. By the way, we're talking to Hall of Famer, the great Sir Nick Faldo, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams still riding shotgun for you. Let's talk about the distance of the game, because Bryson DeChambeau didn't have the best week. He did his usual thing, trying to turn a chessboard into a checkerboard there at Augusta National, and maybe do the double jump thing. Didn't really work out for him this time, but he's continuing with it. And of course, distance has been a subject on everybody's mind for a long time. He didn't create that. He's just sort of the latest creature of that, let's say. But when you look at long drivers, the average driving distance, 1996, you won the Masters, right? Average driving distance on tour that year, 266.49. 266. I don't know if you knew that off the top of your head, if you'd have pulled that. But and John Daly led with an average. His average was 288 at John Daly.
Wow.
Now, I think Bryson won last year. I think it was 326.
Yeah, 320. We're now on the averages of 320. So what's that, 40 yards? That's what we keep saying, 40 and 50 yards. Well, that's just one shot, isn't it, 50 yards? Well, you know, it's the combination of everything. It's obviously the sight, the ball, the driver face, the driver shaft. It's a launch monitor to be able to put it all together. So, you know, the club will perform to your optimum. You can, you don't have to, you only need to know which end to hold the club, and you hit it, and you'll get the technician will keep working with you. And it's just for the pros, you know, you keep fine-tuning and fine-tuning, you know, changing shafts, this sort of thing, which is fabulous. You can do that in seconds. You can try, you know, they know what they're looking for, but basically you can try a couple of different heads, and you'll try half a dozen different shafts, and you'll get it, and you'll get the optimum. And then we got the physical side, and now we understand so much more about how to generate speed. And it's, you know, which was never thought of back in my day. It was, you know, it was all about tempo and quality of the strike, because, you know, a lump of wood with that old bulging rolled rubber golf balls, you know, and if you miss hit that thing, you know, that was the difference to Ari, was the miss hit. So you swung kind of smooth and within yourself because you wanted to strike it really well all the time. Because if you kept towing it and heeling it, you were losing anything between, you know, you could lose 15 or 20 yards of length. So that's why we were smooth and precise. But now, with the size of the driver face, it's been so forgiving that you basically thrash away at it. And if you miss hit it, it only makes 3 or 4 yards difference. So you can't blame Bryson, you know, because everybody in the world wants to hit the goal, their driver further, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, everybody. So he's found a way to tackle it really physically, get bigger and stronger. But, you know, we're all built differently. And there's plenty of players there's plenty of college kids now who can get 135 mile an hour club head speed. So, you know, they're getting it 320 through the air. That's what's changed. It wasn't so long when I went to those numbers like you were talking. We, you know, say 6 or 8 years ago, I'd go on the range and say to guys, what can you hit it? And I said, well, you know, some would say 290. 295, and I said, if you really lean on it, what can you get? Well, I get 300, 305. So that suddenly changed. Suddenly we got the 300-yard club, and then Dustin Johnson whoops a couple out at 320, and then Bryson comes along and whoops some at 350. So this will, if the equipment and everything stayed the same, because everybody's learning how to move their body faster, that will slowly keep rising.
Yeah.
So I just would love them to bring back the quality of the strike, because it's so forgiving that if we could have a smaller head, or smaller face, you know, if they wanted to do some things which wouldn't cost a fortune, you could say, maximum loft on the driver. It has to be more than 10 degrees and up. Well, that would be a huge change, because they're using anything, Bryson's down to, well, 4, 4.5.
Something like that, yeah.
So that means you'd have to find a way to take the spin off it, which would be a skill. And who knows, we'll go the other end and say, like the good old days, what if 56 degrees was the max, or 57 or something, rather than 60 degree wedges and 64 degree wedges. And suddenly stop, you can't have any more loft than just say 56 or 57. That might, you never know, it would definitely bring a bit more skill back into the game. So
little things
like that we could change. I was messaging, well, even the height of the tee, if you couldn't use a 3-inch tee peg so you can hit the thing and launch it, you know, on the up, get 3 and 5 degrees on the up and launch the thing at 15 degrees with no spin on it, then if you had a short tee peg, you'd have to, again, it would be better. You'd still be able to do it, but you would be more skillful. It would give the advantage to the better strikers. So, which is, from my era, that's really was it. The best players were the best ball strikers, flat out. And it was pretty difficult to get the, you know, I guess there wasn't quite so many Cinderella stories of now, because if you weren't a good striker, the odds on you beating all the good strikers is pretty slim.
Right.
You can have a good week. You can have a good week, but now everybody strikes at great. So now it's, you know, it's a mental battle now. It's to create the chances. It's go for everything, because you might as well go for it, because there's a dozen or 20 other guys going for it. So you might as well join the club.
Yeah, it's like
it's almost like if it comes off, I win. If it doesn't, I miss the cut. Doesn't mean I'm playing badly. You know, I might miss by one or something, and I'll stick to that attitude. So we're different physically, technically, mentally, and obviously what we were.
It is a different game, and it's almost like the engineers are competing with each other as much as the players are. You know, it's almost like NASCAR in a way. You know, you've got a fast car and a good driver. You know, gets it done.
Well, absolutely. The science to train another, you know, mile an hour out of a driver in the wind tunnel and all that sort of thing is, I'm not sure when we will come to the max. But then on the physical side, players are learning how to move faster, and it's simply that. It's a mental thing, because we were all told to swing, you know, lovely smooth tempos. And now you can rewire your mind to go, right, I'm going to move myself as quick as, you know, just blink and you miss it. So different psychology.
And just the last thing on this subject, because the question that I have, or the, I guess the statement that I would have, no, it's the question, to what end all of this competitively? Because I did a little digging. So of the players who have led the tour in driving distance between 1980 and 2021, okay, have six different players on that thing. And let's assume that winning majors is what we all want to do. You won a hatful, and that's what everybody wants to do, right? So of all the guys who led the tour in driving between 1980 and 2021, only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 have won a major championship. And only three of those guys have won multiples. You've got John Daly with one. You've got DL3 with one. Yeah. Bubba Watson with two. DJ with two. You have Rory McIlroy with four, who's by far the leader. And then you have Bryson with his win at Wingfoot, you know, in my mind, kind of with an asterisk, because it was competed in the fall at Wingfoot. But that's just me. So you got a total of 1, 2. You've got 6, 10, 11 major championships over the course of, what is that, 40 years?
40 years times four.
Yeah. 40 years times total.
That's so, 160 majors. Yeah,
right.
160 majors.
And when you look, and when you look at this group, if I give you a list, I say Hank Keeney, John Daly, Bubba Watson, Tiger Woods, Bill Glass, and Tom Pertzer. Which one of those guys never led the tour in driving distance? And the answer is?
Tiger.
Right. Yeah. Had the best career.
Well, he was out there. No, it's not distance is not the be all end all. It really is. It's nice to get it out there in all the right areas. You know, we've gone crazy now where they bomb a wedge because they want to hit a wedge in. Well, if you were back hitting anything in less than an 8-iron in, which is a long way back, if you're hitting any wedges from crumbs, you're hitting wedges from just say 100 to 140 yards is generally a wedge. Some guys are 150. Then 8-irons now, my goodness, they're hitting 8-irons from 180 now. You know, some of them 170, anything from 60 to 80.
Insane.
Eight-iron. So, you know, I always said to myself, look, if I'm really good with an 8-iron and down, just hit it in the right place, and if that's the club, then I believe I can get it really close.
Right.
Really close.
Right.
And that to me was how I played. And so I never was worried about, I've got to cut a corner to get a 100-yard shot. If I can place it in the right place and I've got 135 and I'm hitting a 9-iron, it should all be the same. I should still be able to get inside the 15-foot circle, and then maybe a couple of, you know, if your short irons are really good, you'll get a kick in a day, that sort of thing. So that's how the guys now like to cut the corners. They take everything on and they want to get it down there, you know. And the problem is modern day stats, they've got new statisticians saying basically get it inside this yardage and there's a chance you're going to get up and down. So that's again, that's the new philosophy. If you all bomb it down there, but I always notice one thing. I always notice when I'm doing my commentary and I look at shot link, there's always an optimum distance. You know, for these approach shots, especially in the short range, from 80, 90s, 100, you know, every 10 yards out to say 150 yards, where there's always an optimum distance that suits that whole location on that green. It's very interesting. You know, so, am I explaining? So, like, for example, if you're around the 125 mark, it's so funny. If you hit it, say, between 120 and 130, that's your shot in. It's red. There's red dots everywhere. There's 60% of the guys make a birdie from right. a certain distance. And you arrive a little too far, a little too close, and there's only like one or two guys make birdie. It's something about, obviously, the green, the spin. And so so that strategy, I would be looking at that from the year before. I'd get all those results. So I knew it's when I stand on every tee and know, oh, this is the ninth hole at Muirfield Village, the pin's front left. I know the only way to stop it, I've got to have a 125-yard shot.
Right.
And then you position it. Where some of them just bomb it down and they get 75-yard shot. Well, you've got no way getting a spin on it. So I still think if you're really smart, strategy would still stack up just because you bomb it down there. Sure, it has some advantages in some places. But
I think if you're
not a bomber, if you're not one, I think it, obviously there's mentally it's tough for the guys who are short. Now let's call short now is 270, 280.
Right.
If you're back there and you know you're 50 yards behind every time, you're feeling pretty demoralized. So that's why you've got to have a great thinking cap on how to block them out and say, okay, I've got 9 birdie chances or whatever on these holes this week, I better make the most of it because I can't birdie, the drive and the four iron holes where the other guys are in driving an 8-iron. So you have to plot your way somehow. It can be quite daunting. I can imagine playing with somebody who can hit it 50 yards past you is no fun at all.
Yeah, that's never happened to me, fortunately. But yeah, it's got to be hurtful. But as I say, it's not how many. And
absolutely, you have to be pretty strong to believe that. Okay, I can still shoot 67 on this golf course, and it might be hard work for you to shoot 67. When the other guy, it might be a little easier. But hey, you got to find a way. You got to find a way to do it.
Got to find a way. As I always say, it's chess, not checkers.
Just
a couple more questions before we let you go, because I know you got a big week coming up down there at Hilton Head. The Open Championship returns. We missed it last year, and it missed us, presumably. You've got to be really excited for that, and it being held in England this year. What are your thoughts on the Open Championship returning to the rotation?
Yeah, well, Royal St. George's, I enjoy playing Royal St. George's, and I'm planning to go over once I finish my TV run, first of July, and get over there early and go and play some golf and go and enjoy good old England. Hopefully they will be, where are we? Got a couple more months to hopefully get back to normal.
Yeah.
And then the Open will be great. I mean, obviously down in that corner of England, we should get warmer, should be nice, should get some nice sunny breezy days. That golf course can get really firm and fast, and be interesting. Again, we'll be talking about these guys hitting it so far, whether they start cutting corners. And there's a few, some guys might have a go at the fifth, which was normally was like a four iron up to the top of the hill and then through the dunes. They might cut the corner and go right over the corner there, and then I think 9 and 10 can play quite short as well.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a go at those too as well. What else have we got? We got the second hole they could have a go at.
Right.
But the bunkers are deep there. It's clear. Some of those bunkers are 12 foot deep. So I wouldn't. They're not. You've got to have some respect for those. You can't just wail away and go, oh, it doesn't matter if I'm in that thing, because you'll be, after three goes, you'll finally get out of it.
Yeah, I'd just say winning major championships is about keeping those big numbers off the card, and you know, those are certainly available at Royal St. George's. The last winner there, the last time it was there, was Darren Clark. There, which was just big. I met him a couple of times, just as nice a guy as you can imagine. Do you see there were 10 players in the 10 English players in the Masters field. Do you think an Englishman can break through Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, and win the Open Championship on home soil?
Yeah, it could be. Somebody could be inspired, you know. Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood's been playing very well. He kind of got a little frustrated. He hasn't had the results going. Who else? We've got Tyrrell Hatton's a very good ball striker. Yeah, there's a lot of talented Englishmen right now. So, yeah, you never know. It could be a good week for them to have a shot.
Well, Shane Lowry won last year in Ireland, so I'm going to pick I'm going to pick an Englishman. As soon as we get closer, I'll see who's in form, but I'm definitely picking up.
Definitely picking an Englishman.
Definitely. Okay. I got to pound on an Englishman.
Okay.
Last question for you. Young players all over the place now. We talked about Zalatoris, but you've got Colin Morikawa. You've got, it goes on and on, Xander Schauffele, who almost won this week. So many good players to recognize and talk about. We could be on for another hour, but I wanted to know if there's a player out there who reminds you of you when you were at your best.
Yeah, I don't know. I never thought of it like that, to be honest. Who? No, I can't think of who reminds me of me, of what plotting their way around.
Can I throw out Morikawa again? Does he at all remind you of you?
Colin, he plays, he's a bit like what I was describing, that, you know, he has the mental strength to play his own game. He's better than average with driving, but he's not a bomber. He's not one of the guys who hits a 320 through the air.
Right.
He's more the guy, well, I hit it in the right place, and I hit the right shape shot. And trying to think of who... I like the guys who can stand up and fade it and draw it, you know, when they really do need it. Because it does make a difference if you can turn the ball and catch slopes and feed it to the round corners rather than just being one-dimensional and just, you know your putting stats, your averages, if you can get within 15 feet instead of 25 feet, there's a huge... percentage in your favor if you're around 15 feet to hold putts. I think that makes a difference. The guys who are talented enough to turn the ball just enough each way to work it. And, you know, there's a lot play one-dimensionally. You know, they kind of, and it kind of fits. But to make the difference when you really need it, I think it's cool to be able to, you know, shape it just enough.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy watching the young artists. Justin Thomas is another one who comes to mind, who has a little bit of that. You know, he's got more than one pitch. You know, he's not Nolan Ryan. He's more.
Yeah, he throws a hook out and they call him a genius. My goodness. I'm like, you're kidding me. You know, you're only making a ball spin the other way.
Didn't you know Justin Thomas invented that shot, the low hook? He invented that, right?
Yeah, boy, yeah, go. You should have seen some of the shots that we used to hit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
With crappy old clubs as well. You know, what we used to be able to twang a long iron with a fish knife.
Yeah.
Those were the days. see some shots.
Indeed. Indeed. I have a set of those up on the wall, but those don't go anywhere near a golf course anymore. Believe me, I couldn't hit them. And the last thing before I let you go, I promise, is I lived in London for 2 years, big Anglophiles, English literature major in school, the whole thing. Love it there. And while I was there, I became a Liverpool fan. Been a Liverpool fan for 30 years. Last year was awesome. As soon as we're done, I'm going to go watch Liverpool and Real Madrid play in the Champions League. Got to ask.
Wow, yeah. That's big.
Who's your favorite team? Who are you a supporter of? What's your team?
Well, it's so funny. When I was a lad, I went with mum and dad. We went to London on the train to King's Cross, and I'm 10 years old, and the door suddenly opened. All the Leeds United supporters came down to play Arsenal. So my dad was Arsenal, and so I saw all these Leeds supporters. So I just had to go with one of Leeds United to go with dad. And so I know he took me late, a couple of years later, he took me to a match Leeds, Arsenal, and that. So, but then I, you know, I fell out with soccer through the '80s when they were full of hooligans, and now, so now it's massive. You know, and it's great with timing. You can be in the kitchen at the weekend and put it on, and you know, I like watching all the highlights and the goals and what have you. I'll sit down occasionally and watch a full game if it's if I know it's rivalry. My son is Man United. My other friends are Chelsea and Spurs. So, you know, everybody's in different corners and they all give each other a hard time. You know,
well, that's part of the fun, is giving each other a hard time, isn't it?
Yeah. So I haven't been to a funniest, when I took Matthew, we were in Germany. And friends hooked us up to go to see Bayern Munich play. Mm. And so we get there, and because we're in the VIP box, which is fantastic, you can imagine. You know, you park your car underneath, and you go straight up in the lift, and you end up in the suite, and then you got your seats outside. So we sat through the whole of the first half, no goals, of course, and so we go and have some lunch, or some snack or lunch. So the whistle goes before we get back to sit, and there's a goal. So we missed the goal. Oh, God. And then we sat there for the rest of the second half, and they're kicking it about. There's not going to be a goal. So I said, hey, with 4 minutes to go, hey, let's do a runner. So we beat the crowd, which was the wrong thing, because this the VIP, it was the BMW, of course, suite. They had their own road out, you know. So that was a big mistake. No problem about getting out there. The BMW suite had its own road. So I said, but I didn't know that. So we leave 4 minutes to go, and they score two goals. So we were there, and we missed 5 minutes of the game, and we missed all three goals. So I thought, oh, that's typical for my football fan, whatever, being a football fan.
Don't let that color your experience. Don't let that color it. You will. I promise you, the next time you watch, there will be a goal. There will be. There will be. So, Nick, hey, look, I really, really thanks so much for taking the time. Always great to talk to you, and maybe we can organize to get you back on before the Open Championship and talk a little bit more in detail about that course. And
I'll do a live report from the windy links with the seagulls out there. Skylarks. We get lovely skylarks in Britain. I love that. It's a breezy, sunny day with the skylarks. It'll be very, very English.
Well, you must be in the business, because you're paint a pretty picture in a theater of the mind.
Yeah.
So
I paint the picture,
yeah. Okay. Lovely. All right, my friend.
Talk to you in the summer. Okay, thanks.
Talk to you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, cheers. Thanks.
That is the one and only Sir Nick Faldo. He is he's a gem. He's awesome. So absorb that knowledge about junior golf, about the future of the game, about the Masters. And as I said, this is on record. We're going to hold him to it to have him back for the Open Championship. Stay with us. We'll be back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole, golf, WRX. Well, that's it and that's all, boys and girls, for this episode of The 19th Hole. I want to thank my one and only very special guest, Sir Nick Faldo, for spending so much time with us. That was an education. I hope you had your notebooks out. I hope that you bookmark, earmark, and otherwise mark this episode, because you certainly picked up some knowledge there. And I would love to get an instruction. Can you imagine a playing lesson from Nick Faldo on the course to get with that swing, with that approach, with that mind? That's the way you play golf for a lifetime. I would love to get on a course with him. I will be lobbying for that later. You can find this podcast and all wonderful Golf WRX podcasts on golfwrx.com. You can also find us on Spotify. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on a host of other places, Apple Music and a host of other places where you can find magnificent podcast content. As for social media, well, I'm on there. You can find me on Twitter, Michael on TV. You can find me on Instagram at Michael Williams TV. Ping me now. Operators are standing by to respond to your technical messages. Thank you all for listening. And again, thank you so much for your support, your love, and your outreach. I do appreciate it. We'll be back next week with more great stuff. The tour's in Hilton Head next week. One of my favorite courses, my absolute favorite Pete Dye course. It is a gem. It is a monster. I love that golf course that they're playing on. So we'll probably have some folks on from Harbortown to see what those guys are doing. But in the meantime, go play where you play. Go hit some balls. Do hit them straight. And please, I've reminded myself now, and I want to remind you, don't count the days. Make the days count. Michael Williams, 19th hole, golf, WRX.